Finance Committee Luncheon, Muskie's Remarks, October 21st, 1971.
Thank you very much, Ed. And Dick, Mrs. Pichelle, and my good friends on both sides of this podium. First of all, let me say thank you for being here. I'm not sure that I have anything left to give you after that meeting at the Miami University campus this morning. I feel very much like the fellow who wrote the shortest will in Maine history. I don't know whether you can beat it here in Florida or not, but it was 10 words. It went like this. Being of sound mind and body, I spent it all. Well, I probably spent it all this morning in terms of energy and capacity to stir an audience. I appreciate Ed Stern's introduction, but I'm a little restive about it, too. They call me the voice of reason who never says anything without thinking. Well, if that's true, I've made some bad mistakes in recent weeks and months. And reason, obviously, and common sense have a great deal to do with, I think, or ought to have, with American campaigns and with developing the issues and with discussing them. But I think in America, too, we need to feel deeply about these issues and problems and about the directions that our country ought to take. Dr. Bennis, whom I just had the privilege of meeting for the first time, put it to me this way. He said that what we need in the White House is a man of vision. He said something else, that we are, after all, in this country, a nation of minorities. The only majority I know of is the female sex. And they regard themselves as a minority in the light of their present legal status. So we are a nation of minorities. And recognizing that, and the conflicts that that inevitably poses between the interests of different groups, it becomes very difficult to campaign nationally for national office, especially in a climate where each group wants to hear a candidate address himself almost exclusively to their point of view and their interests. And there's a tendency to believe that if the candidate speaking to a particular group shows any sympathy or interest at all in the problems or the interests of another group, especially one that is regarded as hostile or unfriendly, that therefore he is also hostile or unfriendly. And you run into this kind of attitude and on campuses and with students particularly. So you've got to be on your toes in these campuses, campus appearances. And let me tell you this about it, that if you go into one of those with the formula of agreeing with everyone who asks a question, you're not going to survive that appearance, let alone the campaign. And so as I view this campaign that lies ahead, in many ways, it may be the most difficult that a candidate or a potential candidate has ever had to face, for two reasons. One, I think the next president of the United States, whoever he is, needs to have a maximum capacity for leading all these different groups of Americans with their conflicts and potential conflicts of interest in the same direction, with confidence in his leadership and confidence in the direction which he proposes to take. If the next president of the United States doesn't have this capacity and this kind of support, then we'll continue our momentum in the direction of divisiveness, factionalism, and fragmentation that could seriously undermine, if not destroy, our capacity to work together and to move together in the same direction. And to lay the basis for that kind of leadership and support, In 23, your Democratic primaries, in the next 6 months, is about as formidable a political chore as I've ever faced. And that isn't all of it. Within any given state, like this one, one finds the same tug of interests and issues that separate citizens of this state from each other, and that will be exploited or used or at least probed by the candidates. So I hope as you look at these primary campaigns next year and ponder the dilemma faced by candidates in responding to the issues and to the interests and needs of particular groups and people, that you take into account the need to rely in great part upon your evaluation of the character and integrity and approach of a candidate, as well as his specific answers on specific issues or questions. Because I can't think of an issue which rises to the level of a national campaign to which a candidate can produce one answer that pleases all people. That's simply impossible. I might say that the students at campus have a particular genius for raising all this each time. And you know before you start that you're going to displease a lot of those before you with your answers. And so you have to make up your mind where you stand and why on issues. And you got to be prepared to explain it so that people can at least respect your position if they do not agree with it. Now, if this kind of campaigning and forthright approach to the issues isn't saleable in America in 1972, then it isn't possible to build a united country. I think it's as simple as that. My own belief, based upon a quarter of a century of public life, is that most Americans would give you a great margin for disagreeing with their views, provided they approve of your basic thrust and have confidence in you as an individual. But this is going to be the real test. The test of candidates as men, as human beings, with the capacity to understand and articulate the issues. And I can't think of a test that's going to be more meaningful and trying than the one here in the Florida primary. And so I approach it with mixed emotion. It's a great opportunity, you know, to test your appeal to a very diverse constituency, but it's also a great hurdle, especially as one considers that you go from here then to Wisconsin, which is an entirely different constituency, then maybe Indiana and Massachusetts and Rhode Island and Oregon and California and all the places in between. And somehow, a candidate's got to find it possible to be honest, truthful, direct, and survive all those tests. All those different groups of people looking at issues in a different way, whether it's busing or abortion or Cuba, or Ireland, or the Middle East, or Vietnam, or what have you. All the tough ones. Well, that's the hurdle. That's the challenge. And I look forward to it, frankly, because I've been in public life a quarter of a century. I've had an opportunity that I didn't plan, didn't expect, to develop a quarter of a century of experience and hopefully some capacity to understand our political institutions and our people, and the techniques of political persuasion and organization to apply to political problems. I never dreamed that I'd have a chance to reach for the ultimate test, but it's there. And so you don't shrink from it. You want to see if you can do it. More important, you know it's important for somebody to do it. And so I'm grateful to all of you, to those like Dick Pettigrew and Ed Stern and others in this room who have been so helpful already, who are committed, loyal and good friends, as well as political supporters, and who've undertaken to reach out into Florida to get other people interested and involved, and to those of you who have responded to their leadership and their invitation. It just isn't possible to do this sort of thing unless there are those like Dick and Ed and others here in this room who are willing to do that kind of thing, to become the contact between the candidate or potential candidate and the constituents, he is seeking to move and inspire and enlist. We've got a great challenge here in this country to prove that we are one country, that we can be one country, with all that means for even the least of us, because it is their country as well as the country of the most affluent. Unless it has equal meaning for both, it has no meaning for either. That's what we face. That's the test we meet. That's the proof we've got to establish anew in 1972. I think it can be done. I think there's a strong sense of decency in our people, and always has been. And I think all of our people, by and large, want to respond to it. They want this to be a good country. They want to be good to each other. They want to be fair to each other. But they're restrained and inhibited by their fears, their suspicions, their doubts, and by the evidence they've had to justify those fears, suspicions, and doubts. And so they've got to be motivated and led and inspired to respond to that sense of decency, which is really America at her best, and which has been our mark at our best over two centuries. This is the nature of the job that confronts us. And I want to be involved in that. I want to have a role in it. I think I have something to contribute to it. And I want to be honest about how I feel about it. And I want to try to help reinvigorate the confidence the American people once had in our system and our national purposes. Because I think if we can, we can be, as we have been, a great and good country. And I think Americans, most of them, want us to be a great and good country more than they want us to be a powerful country. And we can be powerful if we're good, in the real sense of that word. So I look forward to coming to Florida often, especially the next party, the Clambake, down here in November. I hope that they are Maine lobsters you bring down from Maine. I'll be able to tell because I can hypnotize a Maine lobster, and I'm not sure I could hypnotize a Florida lobster. I understand we're going to have Florida shrimp. The only reason you're going to serve Florida shrimp is because Florida shrimp are bigger than Maine shrimp. I'm convinced that's so. But in any case, it promises to be a great party, and above all, an opportunity for me to make new friends here in Florida, and I'm going to need a great many of them between now and next March, and I hope you'll help. Thank you very much.